Welcome to Food for Thought. My name is Colleen Patrick-Goudreau from Compassionate Cooks. I founded Compassionate Cooks to empower people to make informed food choices and to debunk myths about vegetarianism and animal rights. I do this through cooking classes, articles and essays, workshops and lectures, a cooking DVD, a new cookbook called The Joy of Vegan Baking, and of course, this podcast. You can learn more about who we are by visiting our websites, CompassionateCooks.com and JoyOfVeganBaking.com. Before I do or say anything else, first I would like to thank today's sponsor, Janet Frick. Hi, Janet. I first heard from Janet a few months ago via email, and she and I have corresponded a number of times since then, and I'd like to read you some of her initial email, which I remain incredibly touched and moved by. Here's some of what she wrote. Hi, Colleen. I am one of the lucky people who stumbled upon your podcast while searching for other health and veg-friendly podcasts out there. I listen to podcasts while out on my daily walks and have found this to be a great way to stay inspired and informed. Little did I know, however, when I started listening to your podcast a week ago, that it would change my life. I became a vegetarian about 14 years ago out of an interest both in healthier eating and lessening my impact on the environment. However, my diet was not what you would call a whole foods diet, relying far too much on packaged products with far too many sweets, and I had gotten a bit lax in my principles, starting to eat salmon during my pregnancies and then other seafood, and a bit of turkey on Thanksgiving. You get the idea. I also had never given up eggs or dairy products. Joel Fuhrman's podcast and his Eat to Live book had begun to get me on the right track, and I was making slow, gradual changes going from some soy milk to all soy milk, eating more whole foods and more greens, etc. However, your podcast has truly been life-changing. In the last week, I have listened to nearly every episode and am finding myself more inspired, more informed, and more spoken to than I ever have been by a stranger. I described it to another vegetarian friend as feeling like I'm talking with my best friend while out on a walk. I now know that I must live the rest of my life as a vegan. It's the only path that makes sense, given what I know. I probably wasn't ready for this step a few years ago or even a few months ago, but now that I know what I know, I can't pretend not to know it. I mostly want to say that you are making a huge difference, and I am honored to help you do what you are obviously called to do. So that's from Janet, who is the sponsor of today's podcast. And thank you, Janet. I don't know if you're getting sick of hearing these emails, but I hope not. People like Janet are just so full of life and energy and openness and compassion and honesty. And I feel so grateful and blessed to be on the receiving end of their generosity. So Janet, thank you for your support and for your correspondence. And might I say at this point, your friendship, it's been a pleasure getting to know you. And I hear from a number of you who say that you feel like you're listening to a friend when you hear this podcast, and that just means so much to me. And I feel the same way. I really feel quite enveloped by all of you, and that's a mighty nice feeling. So thank you for everything you do to support this podcast. If you would like to sponsor this podcast to help keep it going, to help inspire and empower others, I would be most grateful. You may choose to sponsor one time or every month, and you can choose the amount that you feel reflects what you receive from this podcast. Any and every amount helps immensely. You can visit CompassionateCooks.com and click on Support Our Podcast to see your options, and I thank you very much. Also, please join our new message board, which enables you to access the websites and resources that I name in each episode. I have a forum there that enables you to discuss each episode with other listeners, and mostly it enables you to connect with other listeners who might even be living next door to you. You never know. So visit the message board by visiting CompassionateCooks.com, and then from the top menu, you'll see podcast, and you scroll down and you'll see podcast message board from there. As regular listeners know, the format for today's episode is such that I read something written by someone other than myself, drawing from poetry, from literature, from essays, etc. And if you haven't noticed already, I like to put things into their proper context. For instance, a number of you have heard Isaac Bashevis, singer, quoted a number of times. His quotes are very famous as they pertain to animals and animal rights. But not many people have read the stories from which these quotes arise. And I read his short story, The Slaughterer, recently, and many more will follow. And I just really appreciate being able to put the quotes into their proper context. One person who's quoted, or rather cited, by vegetarians and a lot is Pythagoras. Pythagoras of Samos is believed to have been born somewhere between 580 and 572 BC and died somewhere between 500 and 490 BC. He was a Greek philosopher, founder of the religious movement called Pythagoreanism, and he's often revered as a great mathematician, a mystic, and a scientist. We do know that his teachings influenced Plato. We do know that he left Greece at one point and migrated to Italy, Calabria specifically. And we know that when he began teaching formally, he opened his school to both men and women. His organization, if you want to call it that, was in some ways a school, in some ways a brotherhood, in some ways a monastery, and people who followed his teachings were called Pythagoreans. One of the things that Pythagoreans are most known for is their theory of the transmigration of the soul, and you'll hear more about that when I read the passage I've chosen for today. Just as we have no primary text for Socrates, everything we know about Socrates comes from the writings of four men, essentially, Xenophon, Plato, Aristotle, and Aristophanes, no primary texts by Pythagoras survive. So we have to rely on the writings of other people who came after him to learn anything about him. And one of the sources we can turn to know more about Pythagoras lived hundreds of years after Pythagoras died, and that's Publius Ovidius Naso, known simply as Ovid. Ovid, as you may know, Ovid, O-V-I-D, was a Roman poet who lived from 43 BC to 17 AD. And he wrote about many topics, especially love. His poetry had a huge influence on European art and literature, and he's considered one of the great poets of the Western world. His most famous work is called The Metamorphoses, which is an epic poem that draws on Greek mythology. Transformation is really the primary theme of this work, and in it, there are many, many stories from Greek mythology about humans transforming into new bodies, transforming into trees or rocks or animals or flowers or constellations and so forth. So, for instance, many famous myths are recounted in the Metamorphoses, such as that of Apollo and Daphne, such as that of Orpheus and Eurydice, and that of Pygmalion. It's a wonderful work, and Ovid devotes a number of chapters to Pythagoras's teachings, and one of those chapters is dedicated to his philosophy of vegetarianism. Early vegetarians, you may not know this, but early vegetarians were called Pythagoreans, and Pythagoras is considered the father of vegetarianism in that he taught it as a formal ethical tenet to follow. Now, vegetarianism has been part of a religious lifestyle in the East for thousands of years, but Pythagoras formalizes it in the West for the first time, or at least as far as we're aware, it was the first time. And now, as you'll hear in the passage I'm going to read, his moral objections to eating animals seems to stem from his religious conviction that the human soul transmigrates, or in other words, reincarnates after physical death. So he warned that if you're consuming an animal, you may very well be consuming a human soul because of this idea of transmigration of the soul. Subsequent followers of his teachings took this less seriously than the fact that the killing and consuming of animals desensitizes humans to animal suffering and thus to human suffering. And this is a theory that stems from Pythagoras's teachings, and you'll hear a bit of this in Ovid's poem. So it's the section about Pythagoras's philosophy on vegetarianism from Ovid's Metamorphoses that I would like to read. Now, I checked out a number of different translations, and I really like this one the best. It's by Rolf Humphreys, and it's reprinted in a book that's quite, I think, unknown, but very well-researched and very well-edited. It's a book called Ethical Vegetarianism, From Pythagoras to Peter Singer. And if I don't already have this in my store by the time I finish editing this podcast episode, I'll make sure that it is. So you can check it out yourself, and I'll obviously list this on the forum on the message board, where I will put resources and websites and books from the episodes that you're listening to. Now, please keep in mind that though the poem and translation are really lovely, there are some things in terms of content that I don't necessarily agree with, but I'm willing to cut both Pythagoras as well as Ovid a little slack and keep in mind the time in which they each lived. They were already steeped in an agricultural society where animals were viewed as simply utilitarian, you know, there for the purpose of human use. So I think you'll be able to pick out the places that don't necessarily resonate with us today, but it's still worth sharing this piece with you so that you understand how far back vegetarianism goes. I think it will help put all of the references to Pythagoras into context, and it provides a foundation of the compassionate lifestyle that I advocate today, 2,500 years after Pythagoras died. So here is the section from Ovid's Metamorphoses, the teachings of Pythagoras on vegetarianism, as reprinted in Ethical Vegetarianism from Pythagoras to Peter Singer and translated by Rolf Humphreys. Here goes. There was a man here, Samian born, but he had fled from Samos, for he hated tyrants and chose instead an exile's lot. His thought reached far aloft to the great gods in heaven, and his imagination looked on visions beyond his mortal sight. All things he studied with watchful, eager mind, and he brought home what he had learned and sat among the people, teaching them what was worthy. And they listened in silence, wondering at the revelations, how the great world began, the primal cause, the nature of things, what God is, whence the snows come down, where lightning breaks from, whether wind or Jove speaks in the thunder from the clouds, the cause of earthquakes, by what law the stars wheel in their course, all the secrets hidden from man's imperfect knowledge. He was first to say that animal food should not be eaten, and learned as he was, men did not always believe him when he preached, "Forbear, O mortals, to spoil your bodies with such impious food. There is corn for you, apples, whose weight bears down the bending branches. There are grapes that swell on the green vines, and pleasant herbs, and greens made mellow and soft with cooking. Earth is generous with her provision, and her sustenance is very kind. She offers for your tables food that requires no bloodshed and no slaughter. Meat is for beasts to feed on, yet not all are carnivores, for horses, sheep, and cattle subsist on grass, but those whose disposition is fierce and cruel, tigers, raging lions, and bears and wolves delight in bloody feasting. Oh, what a wicked thing it is for flesh to be the tomb of flesh, for the body's craving to fatten on the body of another, for one live creature to continue living through one live creature's death. In all the richness that earth, the best of mothers, tenders to us, does nothing please except to chew and mangle the flesh of slaughtered animals? The Cyclops could do no worse. Must you destroy another to satiate your greedy, gutted cravings? There was a time, the golden age, we call it, happy in fruits and herbs, when no men tainted their lips with blood, and birds went flying safely through air, and in the fields the rabbits wandered unfrightened, and no little fish was ever hooked by its own credulity. All things were free from treachery and fear and cunning, and all was peaceful. But some innovator, a good-for-nothing whoever he was, decided in envy that what lions ate was better, stuffed meat into his belly like a furnace, and paved the way for crime. It may have been that steel was warmed and dyed with blood through killing dangerous beasts, and that could be forgiven on grounds of self-defense. To kill wild beasts is lawful, but they never should be eaten. One crime leads to another. First, the swine were slaughtered, since they rooted up the seeds and spoiled the season's crop. Then goats were punished on vengeful altars for nibbling at the grapevines. These both deserved their fate, but the poor sheep, what had they ever done? Born for man's service, but bring us milk, so sweet to drink, and clothe us with their soft wool, who give us more while living than ever they could in death. And what had oxen, incapable of fraud or trick or cunning, simple and harmless, born to a life of labor, what had they ever done? None, But an ingrate, unworthy of the gift of grain, could ever take off the weight of the yoke, and with the axe strike at the neck that bore it, kill his fellow who helped him break the soil and raise the harvest. It is bad enough to do these things. We make the gods our partners in the abomination, saying they love the blood of bulls in heaven. So there he stands, the victim at the altars, without a blemish, perfect, and his beauty proves his own doom. In sacrificial garlands, horns tipped with gold, and hears the priest intoning, not knowing what he means, watches the barley sprinkled between his horns, the very barley he helped make grow, and then is struck, and with his blood he stains the knife whose flashing he may have seen reflected in clear water. Then they tear out his entrails, examine, search for the will of heaven, seeking omens, and then, so great man's appetite for food, forbidden then, O human race, you feed, you feast upon your kill. Do not do this, I pray you, but remember, when you taste the flesh of slaughtered cattle, you are eating your fellow workers. Now, since the god inspires me, I follow where he leads, to open Delphi. The very heavens bring you revelation of mysteries, great matters never traced by any mind before, and matters lost or hidden and forgotten, these I sing. There is no greater wonder than to range the starry heights, to leave the earth's dull regions, to ride the clouds, to stand on Atlas's shoulders, and see far off, far down, the little figures wandering here and there, devoid of reason, anxious in fear of death, and so advise them, and so make fate an open book. O mortals, dumb in cold fear of death, why do you tremble at Stygian rivers, shadows, empty names, the lying stock of poets, and the terrors of a false world? I will tell you that your bodies can never suffer evil, whether fire consumes them or the waste of time. Our souls are deathless. Always, when they leave our bodies, they find new dwelling places. I myself, I well remember, in the Trojan War, was Pantheus's son, Euphorbus, and my breast once knew the heavy spear of Menelaus. Not long ago, in Argos, Abas's city, in Juno's temple, I saw the shield I carried on my left arm. All things are always changing, but nothing dies. The spirit comes and goes, is housed wherever it wills, shifts residence from beasts to men, from men to beasts, but always it keeps on living. As the pliant wax is stamped with new designs and is no longer what once it was, but changes form and still is pliant wax, so do I teach that spirit is evermore the same, though passing always to ever-changing bodies. So I warn you, lest appetite murder brotherhood, I warn you, by all the priesthood in me, do not exile what may be kindred souls by evil slaughter. Blood shall not nourish blood. Full sail, I voyage over the boundless ocean, and I tell you, nothing is permanent in all the world. All things are fluid, every image forms, wandering through change. Time is itself a river in constant movement, and the hours flow by like water, wave on wave, pursued, pursuing, forever fugitive, forever new. That which has been is not. That which was not begins to be, motion and moment always in process of renewal. Look, the night, worn out, aims toward the brightness, and sun's glory succeeds the dark. The color of the sky is different at midnight, when tired things lie all at rest, from what it is at morning when Lucifer rides his snowy horse before Aurora paints the sky for Phoebus's coming. The shield of the god reddens at early morning, reddens at evening, but is white at noonday in purer air, farther from earth's contagion. And the moon goddess changes in the night time, lesser today than yesterday if waning, greater tomorrow than today when crescent. Notice the year's four seasons, they resemble our lives. Spring is a nursling, a young child, tender and young, and the grass shines and buds swell with new life, and yet, not yet full grown nor hardy, but promising much to husbandmen, with blossom bright in the fertile fields. And then comes summer, when the year is a strong young man, no better time than this, no richer, no more passionate vigor. Then comes the prime of autumn, a little sober, but ripe and mellow, moderate of mood, halfway from youth to age, with just a showing of gray around the temples, and then winter, tottering, shivering, bald or gray, and aged. Our bodies also change. What we have been, what we now are, we shall not be tomorrow. There was a time when we were only seed, only the hope of men, housed in the womb, where nature shaped us, brought us forth, exposed us to the void air, and there in light we lay, feeble and infant, and were quadrupeds before too long, and after a little wobbled and pulled ourselves upright, holding a chair, the side of the crib, and strength grew into us, and swiftness. Youth and middle age went swiftly down the long hill toward age, and all our vigor came to decline. So Milon, the old wrestler, weeps when he sees his arms, whose bulging muscles were once like Hercules, and Helen weeps to see her wrinkles in the looking-glass. Could this old woman ever have been ravished, taken twice over? Time devours all things with envious age together. The slow gnawing consumes all things, and very, very slowly. Not even the so-called elements are constant. Listen, and I will tell you of their changes. There are four of them, and two, the earth and water, are heavy, and their own weight bears them downward. And two, the air and fire is purer even than air, are light, rise upward if nothing holds them down. These elements are separate in space, yet all things come from them and into them, and they can change into each other. Earth can be dissolved to flowing water. Water can thin to air, and air can thin to fire, and fire can thicken to air again, and air condense to water, and water be compressed to solid earth. Nothing remains the same. The great renewer, nature, makes form from form, and oh, believe me that nothing ever dies. What we call birth is the beginning of a difference. No more than that, and death is only ceasing of what had been before. The parts may vary, shifting from here to there, hither and yon, and back again, but the great sum is constant. Nothing, I am convinced, can be the same forever. There was once an age of gold, later an age of iron. Every place submits to fortune's wheel. I have seen oceans that once were solid land, and I have seen lands made from ocean. Often seashells lie far from the beach, and men have found old anchors on mountaintops. Plateaus have turned to valleys, hills washed away, marshes become dry desert, deserts made pools. Here nature brings forth fountains, there shuts them in. When the earth quakes, new rivers are born, and old ones sink and dry and vanish. Lycus, for instance, swallowed by the earth, emerges far away, a different stream. And Erasinus appears, goes under the ground, and comes to light again in Argos. And Mysis, so the story goes, was tired of his old source and banks and went elsewhere, and now is called Caicus. The Anagyrus was good to drink from once, but now rolls down a flood that you had better leave alone, unless the poets lie, because the centaurs used it to wash their wounds from Hercules' arrows, and Hypanis, rising from Scythian mountains, once fresh and sweet to the taste, is salty and brackish. We must not wander far and wide, forgetting the goal of our discourse. Remember this: the heavens and all below them, earth and her creatures, all change, and we, part of creation, also must suffer change. We are not bodies only, but winged spirits with the power to enter animal forms, house in the bodies of cattle. Therefore, we should respect these dwelling places, which may have given shelter to the spirit of fathers, brothers, cousins, human beings at least, and we should never do them damage, not stuff ourselves like the cannibal Theistus. An evil habit, impious preparation, wicked as human bloodshed, to draw the knife across the throat of the calf, and hear its anguish cry to deaf ears. And who could slay the little goat whose cry is like a baby's, or eat a bird he has himself just fed? One might as well do murder. He is only the shortest step away. Let the bull plow, and let him owe his death to length of days. Let the sheep give you armor for rough weather. The she-goats bring full udders to the milking. Have done with nets and traps, and snares and springs, bird lime and forest beaters, lines and fish hooks. Kill, if you must, the beasts that do you harm. But even so, let appetite refrain from flesh. Take only a gentler nourishment. That's a good motto to live by. I thought this would be interesting to actually give you the last, that kind of last stanza in a different translation, because every translation, well, translates it differently. So I'm just going to read you that last stanza again from another translation. Have done with nets and traps, snares and the arts of deception. Do not trick the birds with limed twigs, or imprison the deer, scarring them with feathered ropes, or hide barbed hooks in treacherous bait. Kill them if they harm you, but even then let killing be enough. Let your mouth be free of their blood. Enjoy milder food. And here's one more translation. Its language is much more ornate than the others. But neither springes, nets, nor snares employ, and be no more ingenious to destroy. Free, as in air, let birds on earth remain, nor let insidious glue their wings constrain, nor opening hounds the trembling stag affright, nor purple feathers intercept his flight, nor hooks concealed in baits for fish prepare, nor lines to heave 'em twinkling up in air. Take not away the life you cannot give, for all things have an equal right to live. Kill noxious creatures where 'tis sin to save. This only just prerogative we have, but nourish life with vegetable food and shun the sacrilegious taste of blood. So that's just another way of saying the same thing. So I think I made my point. I hope you enjoyed listening to the reading today, and on behalf of all the billions of animals who are at the mercy of humans, and on behalf of the billions of humans who have the capacity to show mercy, this is Colleen with Compassionate Cooks. Thanks for listening.